Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. We've been talking quite a bit on this podcast about the impact of COVID-19, but today we want to talk specifically about how this pandemic relates to something quite normally unrelated, which is the military chain of command. And I have with me General Prakash Menon. Welcome, General.
Thank you very much.
Recently, the commander of an American nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, was fired from his job by the Secretary of the Navy. And this was over a leaked letter. And soon after that, the Secretary of Navy has himself resigned. General, first tell us about the Teddy Roosevelt and how does it fit into the U.S. Navy's command structure?
Okay, so actually, I think we'll say TH and make it short for Teddy Roosevelt.
Sure.
So TH is actually the nuclear aircraft carrier of the Indo-Pacific Command, which is one of the main commands of the U.S. And I think we should try to understand as to how does this fit into the larger structure of the U.S. security system itself. So it starts with the president, and it's got the Secretary of Defense with it, and it is advised by the National Security Council. This is called the National Command Authority, which is the highest body as far as the U.S. is concerned. And under that, it's got these unified commands, which are geographical. It's got the Joint Chief of Staff, who is the unified command, conducts the operations. The Joint Chief of Staff plans and coordinates. And then there is the military department of the Army, Navy, and the Air Force, which trains and equips, and they look after the administration. So the combatant command structure is that they've got these geographic commands which come directly under the Secretary of Defense, who works under the President of the United States. And they have five of them: Central Command, European Command, the Pacific, Indo-Pacific Command, Northern Command, and Southern Command. So this specifically is to do with Indo-Pacific. And Indo-Pacific Command is responsible for the Pacific and the Indian Ocean. So we have here a command, and in the command, there are fleets. This carrier is part of the Pacific Fleet. Now, what we should understand is Pacific Fleet is under a four-star admiral. Pacific Fleet has got two fleets, 3 and 7, which are also under three-star admirals. So you have two fleets under Pacific Fleet. And each fleet has at least 4 carrier strike groups under him, and various other formations of destroy. So normally, when you talk about a carrier strike group, it will have an aircraft carrier, and it will have, let's say, 10 to 12 other ships, destroyers, and support ships. That would be a fleet. So this is about one of the fleets which included, and this is just based on, this is about the strike group, which was based on the TH. And commanded, the captain of which was Captain Crozier. Now, so this is the setup. And we must understand that this Indo-Pacific Command is a really large command. It actually has about 20% of active duty U.S. forces, 20%. And it's got about 380,000 personnel under it. And its area of responsibility is also pretty large.
So now, General, so it's obvious that Captain Crozier had a huge responsibility on his shoulders. And all of this, of course, came at the time that you had an outbreak of the coronavirus on board the carrier. It started with some 3 infections. It immediately ballooned to 100. And he then sent out a letter to the Secretary of Navy suggesting that the ship be brought back to port, that it be staffed by a minimal crew, and that everybody else be taken off and be screened and tested And eventually, this letter leaked out to the press. The San Francisco Chronicle published it. And that's the chain of events that eventually led to his being fired. And the Secretary of Navy, of course, has said that Captain Crozier shouldn't have actually sent the email to so many people. Who is in the wrong here, General? Should Captain Crozier have behaved differently, acted differently?
See, I think we must understand the sequence of events to understand what the action, whether he acted correctly or not. Because if you look at the sequence of events, from 4th to 9th of March, the carrier was on a visit to the Vietnam port of Da Nang. It was an operational visit, and it was a signal to Russia and China about the growing bilateral ties between the U.S. and the Vietnamese. And at that point, Vietnam had about 20 COVID-19 cases at that point. On the 24th of March is when TR first reports his first cases. And the ship is actually stocked with 800 testing kits. So the ship is told to come somewhere while moving from out of Da Nang, and where it normally is, the home port is actually Yokosoko, it is told to go to Guam. And it's not very clear as to why Guam was actually selected. But on 27th, the ship arrives in Guam, and it has got by then 30 COVID-19 cases. So between the Da Nang visit and its docking in Guam, it's got 30 cases. It's one is not very clear as to why it didn't go, wasn't sent it back to its home port, which is also as far away as Guam, which is Yokosoko. Maybe it would have taken another day, or it could have actually gone to Yokohama. So he is meanwhile corresponding with these seniors, putting them, giving them what the situation on the ship is, and meanwhile the Secretary of the Navy, Mr. Mobley, is acting secretary, has additional kits flown down to Guam on 28th of March. And at the same time, there's another aircraft carrier in Yokosuka, where two soldiers of the USS Ronald Reagan also reported to have COVID-19. So you actually have a situation where two of their nuclear-powered aircraft carriers have actually been infected with sailors having COVID-19. This is 28th of March. So 29th of March, it appears that Mr. Love, who's the Mobley's chief of staff, was in email touch with Captain Crozier directly asking what the captain needed. He was being asked to what should we do, and there was an email exchange between them. This is 29th of March. On the 30th of March, the CEO, which is Captain Crozier, writes his email. Now, this is an email which he sends to right up to the top, entire chain of command. And he also makes sure that even the person who actually there is his immediate boss, who is a fleet commander, is on his ship. He's actually not very far away. Apparently, he also comes to know about this only through the email. And that email, whereas action is taken, people are offloaded in Guam, then on 31st is published by San Francisco Times. And that's when the trouble starts. That the moment it goes public, then the political overtones of that becomes obvious, because the narrative which is now carried is that the U.S. government, and especially President Trump and the U.S. Navy, is not doing enough for the sailors who are endangered by COVID-19. So the moment it becomes political, then we find that 2 days later, on 2nd of April, Mobley fires the captain of the ship. So the starts when the issue becomes public. And therefore, the first question asked is, how did it become public? Because these sort of things normally is only discussed between the chain of command. It would have to have a security classification. This email apparently did not observe any such precautions, and obviously done deliberately. So from that point of view, that responsibility lies at the door of Captain Crozier, that why would he want to actually send out a communication like this which becomes part of this. I think he's the one who will have to actually answer that question. We don't know how it became public, but we know that such a letter should not have been sent to other than classified platform. So on that, how the letter became public, he is to be blamed. Now the question is, why was he sacked? And I think that was a political decision. Because if you look at what Trump said, and what Modi did was also, after he was sacked, he went down to Guam and then belittled the captain to the crew, which I think was an act which was unwarranted and unbecoming because of the fact that it gave all this too much publicity. So the decision seemed to be political, because the same thing could have been done. The decision could have been kept within the Navy itself, within the chain of command. So there are two things. There is a letter which becomes public and then political, and there is also which and violates the chain of command. And the other one is that the decision is taken politically. That is what it is. Of course, as we know, Morley himself has resigned over the issue. So the point is to ask is, I think the way it has been handled is what is we need to understand, that it has become a case where the morale of the U.S. Navy, whether the government will stand up for an officer who's seen to be protecting his men versus would they like to protect their own political reputation. And I think that's the worst effect which comes out of this incident, that there is a chasm between the serving, because he's got the support from his crew. In fact, there's a video which went out, which you must have probably seen. Everybody cheers and claps as he leaves the ship. So he was obviously a very popular captain. So from purely a handling issue, a management issue, things could have been done better. Even if they wanted to sack him, there are many ways of actually easing out somebody from command without the type of publicity that has come with it. And I think that is what is the lesson which any other armed forces have to learn, that even when you want to do something like this, you must handle it in such a way that it does not tarnish the reputation of the country concerned, nor of the armed forces itself. And I think that's a damage.
So generally, it would seem that both Secretary Modley and Captain Crozier really could have acted better in this whole incident. Now, we've talked about how the government could have handled this better, how it could have eased him out of command later on and so on. What could Captain Crozier have done differently besides, obviously not breaking the chain of command? It seems quite clear that he sent that email to too many people and so on. Is there something else that he could have done? Could he have communicated informally with his direct superior?
That's what it is. You have a chain of command. He could have easily... after all, his immediate boss is just there on the ship itself.
Yes.
That itself is enough evidence that he actually sends an email to 12 other people when his immediate boss is also sitting there. Just makes him part of the... gives him a copy of it. That itself shows there's obviously the relationship between the captain and the fleet commander was not in good shape. So the point is, even if you want to protect your men who you think you're responsible for, there is also a need to understand that there are larger interests also at stake. The country, the government of that country, and also the institution which you are part of. If whatever you did has finally brought about disrepute to the institution and, let's say, put your country in bad light, then that action cannot be condoned. So while he will be celebrated by all within people who know him as a great hero who gave up his, sacrificed his job or his position, there's also the case that he could have handled it better.
So now, General, I want to ask you, we've had something not very dissimilar in India. Back in 2012, Army Chief V.K. Singh had written a letter to the Prime Minister, basically talking about how there were these severe gaps in the Army's preparedness for war. And then that letter was also leaked to the press. There was a huge controversy about it. How do you see that incident? And how does it relate to what has happened with Captain Crozier?
Yeah, that incident also was about the Chief of Army Staff, General V.K. Singh, standing up for speaking, let's say, truth to power through a letter which he addressed to the Prime Minister. But again, the only point was a letter which showed the armed forces' operational preparations in Kutch poor condition was leaked to the press, because we do not know who leaked it. And so General V.K. Singh was well within his rights to write to the Prime Minister for something he was concerned about. But then if such a letter could be leaked, it must really be a case of somebody in the hierarchy, anybody else, leaking it. And that, I think, was unfortunate. But at that time, the government finally handled it better, because in normal circumstances, they could have easily said, let's sack the chief. And if they had sacked him, the government itself would have actually been shown in very poor light, because what he said was also the truth. And therefore, sacking him would have made the situation worse for the government, and the things would have actually snowballed and made a bad situation worse.
Correct.
Another way of looking at it is that as far as civil-military relation is concerned, well, the government can sack anybody. Unless they had proof that he was responsible for leaking the letter, the sacking would have actually shown and made the situation much worse. So, although it would be natural for any government to think about sacking a chief when a letter like that goes to the press, I think the decision taken was right. And if you look at it, that controversy, after some time, died its own death. This one is not going to be so easy, because you have a chain of resignations here. Captain has resigned, and the officiating secretary of the Navy has resigned. So the impact of sacking the captain would be much worse when compared to what the government did against General V.K. Singh. So in retrospect, I think the decision was right, although a lot of people at that time felt the government should have sacked him. But I think in retrospect, it was the correct decisions.
Yeah, as a civilian, thoroughbred civilian general, it occurs to me that the armed forces, you really calls for two things from senior officers. One is a great deal of character and honesty, and the other is showing good judgment. And even the slightest failure in these can have a whole chain of consequences that we can't foresee.
True.
So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for enlightening us about this issue. And thank you all for joining us in All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.